Welcome to Cutting Edge Web Content Development, the podcast where we delve into the world of CMS systems and their crucial role in website and web content development. In each episode, we'll explore the reasons why founders, CEOs, CTOs, and CMOs of web content development companies need CMS systems to thrive in the digital landscape. Get ready to uncover the secrets behind successful website management, content creation, and seamless user experiences. Here's your host, Jonathan Ames.
Welcome to Cutting Edge Web Content Development, a podcast by Butter CMS. Here we share insights on the intersection of content and web development and how you can align these two often competing forces to improve efficiency and business results. Joining us on this episode is Will Sigsworth, the head of SEO of content at Pipedrive. He's here to talk about the balance between new content creation and optimization. Will, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Jonathan. Pleased to be here.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about your background and kind of what got you into SEO content and maybe some of your experiences.
Cool, sure. So I've now been at Pipedrive for about 5 years. Pipedrive, which is a CRM provider for salespeople, marketers, and business owners as well. And as you mentioned, I'm head of SEO content. So I look after a lot of the organic content on the site, ensuring that our pages appear in searches, they engage people there and convert them through to landing on the page. And while on page, they engage them and also encourage them to convert to either a sign up or preferably a customer. So that's been 5 years. I've also done a bit of email at Pipedrive, supported with a bit of PR brand work as well. Before then, I was at Dentsu Aegis. If anyone knows, that's sort of one of the larger agencies that operates in a lot of different fields. I was working for a company called John Brown Media whilst there, that actually got acquired by Dentsu Aegis while I was there. And I was majoritively working on print and digital. So magazines for brands like View Cinemas, which is a cinema chain in the UK, Pets at Home, NatWest, one of the big banking chains over here, as well as digital content, so websites for companies in football, in insurance, and not focusing on SEO content to those websites, but also content that would engage people on across social media. Also managed the company's social media account and did a bit of email there, basically tried to get involved in as much as possible so that I could get experiences that I could learn from and take those learnings into other roles as well.
Yeah, you've had a diverse set of experiences across your career. And I find this with most SEO experts who've been around for a while. They didn't start off in SEO because it didn't really exist very much as a practice back then. And so people have kind of evolved into it. So tell us about your motivations. What made you excited about getting into SEO content and kind of what have been some of your big accomplishments in SEO?
Sure. So when I got into SEO, it definitely felt like the only game in town when it came to content. And I've always been as much a writer as I've been interested in the data side of things. So having this whole sort of system by which you could understand how your content is likely to perform, what sort of content you should be writing, I've just found really compelling. So yeah, I wasn't doing SEO initially at my previous company, but I was the first to do it whilst there, working with another of the Dentsu Aegis umbrella brands like Prospects. We were doing the sort of on-page stuff. They were doing the outreach stuff. So already there, I understood that there's so much scope for three little letters, essentially, to compel people to engage with your brand, essentially. And yeah, it just grew from there, moved to Pipedrive, where we have already had a strong system by which we would create content to drive people to engage with our company. And that was primarily through a blog. But at Pipedrive, because of the success that we've had and because of the way that the company is growing, we've moved into, as a team, I should say, we've moved into working on the landing pages, the product pages, the homepage, the subdomains, anything really that is discoverable, SEO needs to be involved in, right? So that's been a large part of our work. And yeah, I mean, over the last couple of years, following the pandemic, which affected everyone, we've seen strong growth of about sort of 10 to 20% year on year in our key metrics on an already pretty solid baseline. So yeah, pretty happy with that. And that's been primarily through, which we're going to talk about today, that finding that balance between optimization and new content.
And it's not easy. I mean, CRM is a very crowded space, very much like CMS that I work in. There's a lot of big players out there, and like Salesforces, that your competing events. So if you're getting that kind of growth in pipe drive, you're doing some good work there. So let's get to this idea of the strategy of a content audit. First of all, what is a content audit and why should people be thinking about doing one?
Sure. So a content audit is essentially just a way to understand how your website currently performs. And I say your website, not just the content, because when it comes to SEO, there's a lot that goes into it. Your imagery, your architecture, your linking, not just the content. There's a lot of things that go into how your website is read by Google bots and then how they decide to rank it. And obviously, you know, other search engines are available. An audit is so important because it gives you that benchmark. And often it can give you a whole sort of year long or couple of years long strategy from one audit if you run it right. And of course, you should always continue to iterate and test and react to how the algorithms are changing, how your content is performing and what sort of content will perform. But if you're auditing your content on a regular basis, and I'm not necessarily talking about, because I don't hold much trust in external audits. If you're looking for a large, full-scale strategy, really it should be internal. And here's a place for external, and I'll talk about it shortly. But if you've got the tools, and the tools are they're easy to come by, and you've got the processes, an audit can basically set you up for an SEO strategy for the year, or if not more.
Excellent. So let's say someone decides this is a good strategy to follow. They want to do a content audit internally of their site. How do you identify in a content audit the areas that need optimization?
So I'm going to talk a bit about tools here, and other tools are available. I'll just talk about the things I use. So we use SEMrush. There are some great free tools out there like People Also Ask, Google Search Console, of course. So essentially, the first thing to do is to look at what you're ranking for. So if you can see what keywords you have on your page, what their search volume is, what page you're on, already that gives you a pretty good idea where to start. The next thing to do, you've mentioned some of my competitors there, and yeah, it is a very competitive space. So look at what your competitors are doing. And this is a bit of an advantage in my space, because I would argue that HubSpot, in many ways, were the originators of a lot of the big sort of B2B SaaS strategies across SEO that perform. And obviously, you don't want to just copy what they do, but get an understanding of what they're doing, what keywords they're ranking for that you're not necessarily ranking for, that are relevant to your content, and see how you can optimize for them. I mentioned People Also Asked earlier. The next thing to do is sort of try to look at the keywords outside of that remit. So you've got what your competitors are ranking for, you've got what you're ranking for, but what makes logical sense beyond that? And as I said, you can use tools, but for example, if you're ranking for vegan bakery as a search term, you see one of your pages is ranking for that. Maybe it's worth doing a vegan muffin recipe page, or obviously recipe pages, maybe not at the moment with Google's changes to the algorithm, but think about the relevant keywords to the ones that you're already ranking for and start from there. Of course, yeah, I'll go into this a little bit later on, but how do you then decide? This is actually a great point at which finding that balance between prioritization and you can be very useful in your audit, because if you're looking for these keywords, you've seen what you rank for, you see where the opportunities are to improve things, that's where your optimizations are. But then you see what your competitors are ranking for, what you're not targeting. Maybe you're targeting it with similar pages and you can optimize there. Maybe you want new pages. And then you look at the keywords that you're not anywhere near, but are relevant and interesting to your audience and have the right intent. That's your new production. So an audit can give you a good idea of where to focus your time. And it's always very important to base that on what your business goals are. So it's very easy as an SEO to get stuck in the numbers, because it's such a broad number of metrics that you can look at. And pretty much the possibilities are endless, right? You complete cannibalization audit, you correct all the cannibalization opportunities there, and then, oh, wait a minute, there's some cross-linking opportunities to do, or there's some meta descriptions to rewrite. There's always something next on the table, right? So it's very easy to get stuck into that. It's important that when you're looking at whether to optimize or prioritize new, you think about what you want from that content. In our case, it's revenue-based. So as much as we're looking at the keywords, we're also looking at how the page is performing. So a good audit to do as well, if you're at a later stage and you understand those those metrics well and how your pages perform for those metrics. It's to say, okay, well, what sort of pages are working for us? How can we replicate that performance? Is there any way we can improve that performance? So say you're a content website, let's say, so completely the other end of the revenue side of things, and your numbers come from visits, time on page, bounce rate. Obviously, you've got ads on your page, but that's the sort of metrics that are driving things. Look at the pages that are driving the most number of visits, say, to your page and engaging people for the longest, and then look at the keywords on those page, that page, and then you can see if that's worth optimizing for.
So given what you just said, I love SEMrush. It's a great tool. Somebody looking at all of your content might look at three factors to say, what rises to the top of my list? One, the volume of search for that particular keyword. Two, the keyword difficulty. And if it's lower, obviously a better opportunity there. And third might be kind of maybe the conversion rate of the people that are coming in, the traffic coming to that page.
Yeah.
And then you use those three to kind of prioritize your list of content at that point into either, which I love, by the way, that you said, new content, let's look at what the other guys are doing that we're not doing, and then content audit. Let's look at our existing content, what's performing, and then where are there places where it's converting well, and maybe there's lower competitive rank, and we can do a few things to boost ourselves there.
Exactly.
Is that a good summary, what you're saying?
That's a perfect, yeah, put it in much better words than I could, Jonathan. Thank you. The other sort of maybe fourth element that we definitely take into consideration is your own processes. Not every page is as easy to produce as others. So if you've got a page that you can turn around in a couple of days and it's going to get you two or three new customers, and then you've got another page that, yeah, it's going to get you 10 customers, but it's going to take 2 weeks to turn around, maybe you want to focus on a shorter process where you can get quick wins. And quick wins are very important, especially in the world of SEO, because SEO, as we all know, takes time to start bumping up the numbers.
It's always changing.
Yeah, it's always changing. By the time you've reacted to the last change, you're too late. But quick wins, and that's a project that we saw some success with last year, especially finding ways to just tweak pages, quick optimizations, focus on pages when you have more control and you can turn them around more quickly. That's a key way to prioritize as well. And as I mentioned, it all goes back to your business goals. And just as much as SEO changes, your business goals should change as well. And you should be reacting to that. And you can do that with SEO.
So a common question I hear on the front of new content versus refreshes and optimizations, is there a standard number that you should be shooting for? Like, do I do 75% new and 25% optimization, or 50-50? Do you think there's a standard number? Does it all depend on your situation?
All depends on your situation. A company that's just kicked off, they've got a website live, but it's only got sort of four or five pages, a main landing page, a conversion page, a pricing page, an about page. They're obviously they're at the bottom end of the scale, but companies where they're very new production is what makes sense. I might go against sort of the standard thinking a little bit here and say that it's still never too early to optimize. Even if you've got a few pages on your website, most people would say, and it's good advice, is to produce content and see what happens. But I would argue the first thing you should do is understand the content you have and see how to, if there's an opportunity to optimize, but if you're not ranking for something, then how can you create new pages that will assist that pillar page? Because the first few pages on your website, they're more likely to be the most important, right? That's going to be your product page, your about page, the things that tell potential customers what you do. So even though in that early stage, you should be focusing on production and creating new, optimization still shouldn't be far from your mind. And it should remain not far from your mind, because you produce 50 new pages, all of them SEO focused. It's probably time to look at them and see where you can tweak, where you can improve, where the opportunities are. So now I think that's a question, and I'm sure you know the answer as well, is depends very much on the situation you're in.
Yeah, that's good advice. So let's say you get in this process of the content audit. You've got your list. You start pumping out content or revisions. How do you make sure that this all aligns with your overall strategy and goals, so it doesn't kind of become a mishmash?
So it all basically comes back to customer that you're trying to appeal to and the product or solution that you're trying to serve them and the interplay between the two. So everything starts with the customer. You've got an ideal prospect. You've got an idea of what interests your customer in relation to the product. And as long as what you're producing is supporting the customer, is solving their problem, is answering like, how do I complete the job to be done? You should be on the right track. So whether it's prioritizing optimization or new, focus on the customer and the product. And as I mentioned before, just align it with your business goals and you should be on the right track. The key is not to overcomplicate things. Think about what you're trying to achieve and what the customer is trying to achieve and where the product sits between that. And yeah, I mean, it can be difficult to prioritize, as you said, and there's a lot of opportunities available, but focus on the business's mission and you should be in good stead. Unless, of course, this is an important thing as well, never just produce content to rank. Make sure it's always relevant. Going back to the product, going back to the customer. Make sure it's always relevant to what you serve, what you solve. I think, yeah, I was at Brighton SEO last year, which is one of the UK sort of premium SEO events. And John Mueller there said that you're going to be on Google's hit list, I think. I'm not sure if you use that phrasing exactly. If you're, he might have added an S to the start of it, I'm not sure. If you're looking just to rank to purely sell ad space, if you're essentially just creating a page focused on SEO or a whole website focused on SEO that has no relevancy in the what you're trying to sell or serve, unless, of course, you're producing that interesting content in order to educate people. But again, you're trying to sell and serve something, right?
Yes.
It shouldn't all be about ad space.
No, you bring up a good point. I mean, you mentioned jobs to be done, which I love that methodology of thinking, what is someone trying to accomplish as a potential client or customer? This comes to a good question, which is you're writing content and sometimes the job to be done is not being searched for. So in other words, they know they want to do something, but there's maybe it's a feature or there's some kind of process or use case that the customer isn't thinking of to accomplish that job. It doesn't have search volume to it. And so the question is, do you write that stuff and try to tie it to something that does have search volume? Or do you say, hey, because this is important for the customer's conversion journey, we're going to create content around it, even though it doesn't have search volume?
Yeah, an interesting question. In my experience, I haven't had that problem too often, thankfully, because obviously everyone kind of knows what a CRM is in the space, or at least they know what to search for around the product. But yeah, we have had situations like that. And in general, what we've done is we have produced pages that target a search for term, but we optimize for that term that we think is actually the thing people should be searching for, right? So let me think of a good example. I can't think of on any of the top of my head, but to break it down, say you've got a product that helps people find the perfect Valentine's Day gift. It's like Valentine's Day gift ideas is the keyword, but actually what you've produced is a much more complicated tool. It's a Valentine's Day gift aggregator that will help people find what they need. And you've got a landing page with a tool and a bit of content surrounding that to drive a bit more awareness. So in that situation, target both as a primary and secondary keyword, get your primary keyword in there. And then when people land on the page, they'll better understand the tool. And often sometimes in that situation, there's an opportunity to like a bit of pre-brand SEO awareness, if that makes sense. So a lot of times you'll have the opportunity to sort of create your own terminology for what you're producing, which can be very powerful, but only becomes very powerful if you rank for those keywords initially that people are searching for so that they discover your page. And then that terminology that you've used that you think they should be searching for that is more relevant to what you're offering becomes part of the lexicon. And yeah, that's definitely the right way to do it. It's a long burn, but having a sort of a branded term or a phrase, I mean, off the top of my head, like Just Do It, for example, if you search Just Do It, Nike will 100% come up, right? But before then, obviously they put a lot of money behind advertising as well. But if you don't have that budget, which one in 10 companies in the world might have, start early with that unique terminology to your company. Make sure it's very visible on page and optimize for the keywords that people are searching for, but also have as a secondary keyword that phrase or term that you think they should be searching for when it comes to your solution.
Oh, good advice. So you still need to lure them in with some kind of search phrase that's being searched there. And then you can introduce your new phrase with the idea that you might be able to either drive them into that because they should be looking at it, or maybe even generate search traffic on that new term and then just own that.
Yeah.
Yeah, great advice.
Personally, we haven't had that experience, but I've seen companies where it's been successful, even at a smaller scale, where they've managed to get a term or a phrase into that zeitgeist, as it were.
Sure. I mean, I guess branded keywords you could think of is that. Basically, you're bringing people to a keyword that they're searching for, and then you're introducing your brand name, which is unique. And then over time, you build up search traffic on those branded keywords. So
exactly that, yeah.
Yeah, it might be a good explanation of what you're talking about. All right, well, let's talk about this idea of new content versus recycled again, and just go from the perspective of the search engines. So how do they respond differently to new content versus recycled content? How do you manage that?
Yeah, so to be honest, at the most simple level, optimized content's already there. It probably already ranks. You've got a basis, right? You've got a foundation on which to build on. But in my experience, both new and optimized content can perform equally as well, and in a shorter time. So as long as you just take the right actions when you're either producing it or optimizing it, then you have as good a chance with either. Obviously, there's some signals related to the age of a page or how fresh a page's content is Google takes into consideration, but regardless of whether you're producing new or optimizing, then the things to look out for is keep your content fresh. So if you are producing a new page, optimize it later. If it's not performing, especially, make sure you're indexing all your pages. It's a simple one, but 50% of pages aren't indexed, aren't discoverable. So not everyone's doing it. I think that was one statistic I see. It goes up and down. Put it in the right place on your website. So optimizing can sometimes, as well as producing new, can sometimes be about looking at the architecture of your site and understanding exactly where a page should sit, what its parent page should be, what it should link out to. And talking about what it should link out to as well, make sure if you add a page or you optimize a page for a new keyword, that you look through your website for mentions of said keyword and you link back. As long as you're doing that, then whether it's new or optimized, you should have a similar success rate. Again, it depends on...
So that brings us to the question there.
I was going to say, again, it kind of...
We have a little bit of a delay, so it's all right.
Yeah. It also kind of depends on your situation, of course, but I think that's a pretty good rule set to follow.
Excellent. So now talking cadence of doing that kind of optimization, is there a set amount of time that you should go back and review your content? Or does it all depend on whether your content starts maybe losing clicks over time and ranking, and then you should go back and optimize it and just look at that point? Or is it just every X number of months you should go back and do a refresh? What do you think?
Yeah, good question. Timing is a tough one. The first thing you said is a very good indicator. Work on the content that has lost performance, whether that's search performance or the metrics, business goals, performance that's important to you, go back, optimize them. But you've also got to be patient. Things take a time to rank. If you optimize or you produce new and then 3 weeks later you're back on it, it's probably too early. As a rule of thumb, 2 to 3 months, if things aren't moving after that period of time, or they're moving too slowly, or they're moving in the wrong direction, then look at your prioritization and maybe it's time to optimize again.
Got it. That's good. All right. You talked a little bit about SEMrush as one of the tools that you used in doing a content audit. Are there any other tools you found invaluable in helping you find this balance between content creation and optimization?
Yeah. There's a few good ones. So SEMrush is within our team, the key one. We also use a tool called Botify to assist with especially our sort of tech side of things, where there's a lot of optimization opportunities as well. And then another tool we use is ClearScope, which is, you may be familiar with ClearScope, you may be familiar with a tool like Phrase or MarketMuse. SEMrush actually has its own variant of this, but essentially it's like a content optimization tool where you find your keyword that you want to target. Maybe you've got an existing page, you put that into the tool, and it'll crawl the web for the top ranked SERP pages or ranking URLs on the SERPs, establish what similarities are within those pages in terms of relevant terms, and recommend what to add into your page in order to get it up that ranking. And yeah, we've been using it for a while. We know other agencies and companies that use it, and it's never done us wrong. But there are other tools with similar functionality out there as well. So I'd say just find the one that works for you. As with SEMrush and Ahrefs, I prefer SEMrush. People in my team prefer Ahrefs. Depends on what you prefer. And then we use the odd web extension as well, like detailed SEO extension, SEO inspector off the top of my head, just to have a quick look at the page from a meta perspective and see what's good, what's not, and improve there. And then final one I mentioned is more of a resource than a tool, but schema.org. So a lot of the last couple of years we've spent in optimizing pages for schema, whether that's adding schema or adding the content that's relevant to the schema in order to appear in SERP features, things like FAQs, how-tos, although again, they were sunsetted recently. We still think FAQs have value because a lot of FAQs are just long-term keywords that people search for. Yeah, products, testimonials, reviews, etc. Have a look through schema, find the right schema for you, and then add it to your page.
Excellent advice. I have to ask this because last year we got hammered by it and everyone's probably still talking about it. AI, as far as using it in content audits, there's a number of tools out there, some that will help you create an outline, some that will outright write the article for you. What's been your experience with that? Do you have any suggestions or comments on AI in doing a content audit?
So I think it's probably not going to surprise anyone when I say that AI is definitely a useful tool, but obviously it requires that human side to ensure what it's producing is accurate. Even at the smallest level, with a quick prompt, or if you've created your own ChatGPT and GPT and you've got a few lines of prompt in there and the instructions seem pretty simple, once you put in the content, you can get it wrong. And it repeatedly gets it wrong. I'm sure everyone's had the same experience who's been experimenting. So the way that we use it is, yes, we've used a tool in one of our languages to produce briefs and outlines, and also to suggest tweaks in order to add keyword terms and suggestions. And that's been pretty good. We're still experimenting with that, but it seems like a good opportunity. That's with a tool called Phrase. And then the other way we use it is in that just that micro copy side of things. So we have actually sped things up quite a lot by using AI just to rewrite meta descriptions or suggest FAQs, anything that's like quick and easy, instead of searching, why does real estate need a project management software? For example, if that's one of our FAQs, we can just put that into ChatGPT and it'll produce something that's relatively accurate and just needs a quick peruse before you can publish it. Obviously, Google, and I've had debates with a couple of my colleagues about how good it is and what triggers it uses to understand what is AI content and what's not. We personally haven't been penalized, but we're not producing that much AI content yet. We're going to do some testing on that as well. But my instinct is, as long as it has that step by which a human writes it out and rewrites it, and generally there's a lot of editing that can be done there to improve things to get it to your tone of voice. That's definitely something ChatGPT struggles with a lot and AI tools struggle with a lot. Then yeah, it's basically a step in the process, but has it sped things up massively? Not particularly, I wouldn't say.
Great advice. Appreciate your sharing your experience on that. Maybe to finish us up here, do you have a particular project you've done in your own content audits where you could share, this is what we did, this was the result that we got out of it, this is how long it took us, just to kind of walk us through an overview of one of your content audits and kind of some of the things you identified and how they helped you?
Yeah. So big one we did, so we acquired a marketing company a couple of years ago, and they already had a pre-existing blog with a couple of hundred pages on there. So there was a lot of opportunity there for, rather than creating our whole, because obviously we're a CRM, initially we were focusing more on that sales side of things, then we've expanded since then. We didn't have really any marketing content to speak of. So rather than create new, we audited this other website's content to understand where the opportunity was. It kind of, we followed a similar process to which if you had this content pre-existing on your website already. But essentially, we first of all looked at how it was performing, of course, and then we ranked it on that performance level from an SEO basis how easy it would be to rewrite, and that was a lot based on the quality and how close it was to our tone of voice, and also just the relevancy. Because not everything, even though it was email marketing, not everything would have been relevant to our customer base. So it took us a fair while, just because it wasn't a top priority. We were moving things over gradually. At the time, we still needed to be producing content for that sales base, but took us, yeah, I think about 4 to 6 months to produce, to sort out the process and then optimize this. So I think it was like 150 pages finally that we moved across. And then ensuring as well that the architecture was correct. So we created a new section of the blog, but also we had these hub product pages for email marketing that we linked up to from the blog. And we produced a few sort of industries and roles and case study pages to be that midpoint between the blog's more awareness-focused content, product's more conversion-focused content, to help with that consideration side of things, as it were. Having that interlinking structure and just taking our time to optimize everything as well as it could, with tone of voice being considered, as I mentioned before, making sure you're talking about the product that should be talked about, making sure you're appealing to the customer as they want to be talked to. After that, the whole email marketing side of things, we, for the keywords we were ranking for, we overtook our main competitors within, I think, half a year. And yeah, for the keywords we specifically targeted. And then for the landing pages and product pages, they became some of our top revenue performers. So yeah, it was a hugely successful process. Not one I'd want to go through again too soon.
A lot of work.
Yeah, a lot of work. It was a lot of sort of two steps forward, one step back. But patience is key. And as much as, you know, I was saying quick wins are often the best step forward, when it comes to these larger projects, don't be too hasty, because if you spend half the time on something that you should, but it gets a quarter of the rankings, it's not worth it, or it tanks. Another risk of using AI. Although I will say, something I thought about for AI is we're keeping an eye on it. You should always be looking at it and testing it, because it will continuously improve. And if you turn away from it for 1 second, it suddenly might be the best tool in your arsenal. And you just might have forgotten about it because 3 months ago you said, nah, so what we need it for, it's not going to do the job.
Right. Yeah. Good points. Good points. Well, let me ask a few questions about your career and things you've learned. I ask this of everyone who comes on. If you could go back in a time machine, visit yourself at the very beginning of your career, you've learned a few things. What would be the one thing that you'd want to tell yourself and give us a piece of advice?
Good question. Can I only choose one?
We can give a couple if you want. That's fine. It doesn't have to be just one.
So I think, as I mentioned earlier on, I said yes to a lot of things, but I think what I tell my younger self is, don't just say yes, go out and search for those opportunities a bit more. Everything's a learning experience. At that early stage, I'm a decade into my career, which may not seem that long, but 5 years ago, there were far more opportunities for me to go out and learn new skills and get a better understanding of certain channels and certain marketing methods, or even other parts of the business. So I'd say, yeah, don't just say yes, go out and hunt those opportunities down. And I'd say as well, I never wanted to self-promote that much in my career. I never saw it as really that important a step, but it is very important to learn that skill. So even if you feel like you're more introvert, or you're just not interested, I wasn't particularly interested in becoming a face or a name, becoming a marketer. I always thought of myself as like, no, I'm more than that. I'm not just a marketer. I don't want to just present myself as a marketer. It's always worth cultivating that side of things. And I mean, maybe the way things are going, I don't need to be telling young people in the industry that, because they're the best self-promoters out there. They're fully aware of all the social platforms that they can tell their own story on. But yeah, I'd say don't just be someone who's willing to learn, also be someone who's willing to put themselves out there and connect as well.
Yeah. We're talking to you, developers. Get out there and self-promote a little bit, okay?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Now, I know I work with a lot of developers, and sometimes they can be a little introverted. They don't want to toot their own horn, but part of learning is teaching. As you teach something that you've learned, you become better in that. And so as you promote yourself, really promoting yourself is more about teaching some life experiences that you have. you've had a certain set of life experiences, Will, that have given you the insights that you've just shared in this podcast. While yes, that's self-promotion, it's helping other people to kind of take a leapfrog over some of maybe some of the mistakes that they would make if they hadn't heard those insights. So I think really developers out there, you can do that too. Share the things you learn, even if you feel like it's everyone should know this. Share it out there. It'll help you get better, help somebody else out there. And I wish I would have done more of that too when I was younger in my career.
Yeah.
I just kind of had nose of the grindstone and didn't do much of that.
That's exactly it.
Good advice. Very good advice. Well, tell us as far as sources of inspiration, are there any places that you go to find that inspiration, whether books? You mentioned Brighton SEO, it's a place you went, podcasts or conferences maybe where you find inspiration, new things to learn.
Yeah, so Brighton SEO, definitely one. The main SEO periodicals, like Search Engine Journal, it's always super helpful. I like to get all the reports from not just our competitors, the tools we use. So SEMrush, their ranking performance report last year was super insightful because we can't crack the code as to what the algorithm is that Google uses, that ChatGPT uses, et cetera, et cetera. But if we're going to understand on a mass data scale what these indicators are, we have some window into that. That's what sort of SEMrush's reports find it. So yeah, reports. I like downloading a lot of reports. And also it opens you up to sort of those nudge flow campaigns to watch your webinar or find the product page. And then, yeah, follow a couple of people on across social platforms like Neil Patel. Obviously, he's kind of the main guy when it comes to these things.
There's a guy who knows how to self-promote. Holy smokes.
Yes.
I remember before Neil Patel was known by anything when he was just doing some blog content. And now it's like, you can't go to an SEO conference without Neil being there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's so good at self-promotion, he's getting other people to do it for him.
No, great advice there. Good
advice. So, yeah, but to be honest, like learning is definitely, it's something you need to find your own path to. But I found, yeah, reports and following just the main headlines to be the most insightful things for me.
Excellent. Well, Will, tell us a little bit about Pipedrive. You work there. You've been there for 5 years. What's Pipedrive? Who's it for? Where can people find it? And if they want to connect with you, how could they connect with you?
Great. So Pipedrive, pipedrive.com. That's where you can find us. We're a sales CRM, but also a CRM for loads of other parts of your business. If you're just starting out or if you're looking to scale, it's just a really easy to use, customizable CRM with an easy to follow and use pipeline dashboard, reporting, automations, loads of integrations with some of your favorite tools as well, like Zapier or Facebook or Google. Essentially, we try and just help our customers make deals. That's what we're driving towards. We want to make it as easy as possible for them to find new leads, get them into the pipeline, engage them, monitor what's working through that pipeline, and then convert them at the end. And yeah, we're really excited when our customers convert big deals. I think there's still like an animation that a lot of our customers get. And I've had, because I manage the case studies as well on the website, quite a few of the customers have said, you know what I love about Pipedrive? The animations I get when I close a deal. So we just want to make that experience as like satisfying as possible for them, not just the moment itself, but also the build up to it.
Yeah, I used Pipedrive several years ago, and it is very easy to use. I did enjoy it. Even as someone who was a non-salesman, I thought Pipedrive was easy to use.
Thanks. Yeah, yeah. It's created for salespeople, by salespeople was one of our early mottos. And yeah, I think, as you said, it's not just salespeople that can benefit it from it. Anyone who wants to move things through a pipeline in an easiest way, and in as easy a way as possible, can benefit from the tool.
So pipedrive.com is where they can find you, correct?
Correct. And they can find me if they look on LinkedIn, William Sixworth. You'll probably have my name in the title of the
we'll have it
episode, I guess. Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Will. Really appreciate all your insights and you taking the time to share those here.
Yeah, it was a pleasure, Jonathan. I hope that I was helpful to at least one of your listeners. As I said, I'm on a constant search to learn. So reach out if you've got any more advice that you'd like to give me as well.
Excellent.
And that's to your followers and listeners.
Thanks, Will.
Cutting Edge Web Content Development is brought to you by Butter CMS. To find out how you can build better with Butter, stop wasting dev time, and free your marketers from your legacy CMS, visit buttercms.com. Also, make sure to search for Cutting Edge Web Content Development in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Butter CMS, thank you for listening.